Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is a Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. We're just going to dive straight in today. Top line, Caroline, one man's crusade to save the Earth.
Yeah, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has announced a climate change battling war chest he's going to invest in saving the planet.
Fab.
And Claire, Marks and Sparks?
Yeah, a little project that M&S has been working on in partnership with a company called Signify. I'll be talking about that.
Cool, and there's a sustainability angle to that.
There may well be.
We shall find out soon. More on that later. I'm going to talk about the EU's grand strategy to defy the US and China with its artificial intelligence efforts and its open data economy. 5-year plan. But we're going to start with Caroline and the lovely Jeff Bezos.
Or JB, as I call him. Yeah, he announced on his Instagram page this week, which I thought was quite interesting, that he is putting up $10 billion of his own money to invest in climate change initiatives, more specifically, initiatives to combat climate change. So he said it's going to be things like, it's going to be investing in things that will amplify existing ways to save the planet and also explore new ways to save the planet as well by investing in the work that scientists are doing, that NGOs are involved with, and also activists as well. But I thought the fact that it was on his Instagram page was quite interesting. This wasn't coming out from Amazon's PR machine, as it were. It's like, I think, to signify the fact that it's his own personal wealth he's stumping up for it. So I think, let's put it out on Instagram and,
make it approachable and...
Yeah, and all that kind of thing.
Reach all of the young influencers.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, you can't really control who's going to respond to that. So some of the comments underneath it were a little... but there was lots of supportive comments, like, you rule, Jeff. You're the best, Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. But there was also quite a few people who left some less supportive comments underneath as well.
Surprise, surprise.
What I did note, though, was that Hollywood actress Reese Witherspoon, who was in Legally Blonde and the TV show Big Little Lies, she liked the post. He's got her vote, basically, so that's good.
Got a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't really know a lot about how this fund is going to work at the moment. All he said is that the first grants from this $10 billion will be given out in the summer. So I don't know how you apply for it. I don't know what's involved. He hasn't given any details, so don't ask me, is what I'm going to say.
Cool.
Okay, cool.
But he did
Thanks,
say,
Caroline.
We can save the Earth, didn't he? I think
yeah.
It's a direct call.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he did. I don't remember off the top of my head. But like I say, there were some supportive comments, and there were some not so supportive comments.
What?
Well, let's say it's the internet. Everyone hates everything.
Yeah,
so that kind of gives you a measure of what the Instagram response was.
Fab.
But aside from the internet, there's also been a little bit of criticism of these plans from two major camps. The first is from Amazon's own employees.
Mm.
Who are banding together under this Amazon Employees for Climate Justice banner, who in the last, I don't know exactly how long they've been together, but let's say recent times they've emerged as quite a vocal opponent to a lot of work that, or a lot of how Amazon operates have been quite vocal in their critique of that, just sort of shining a light on some of their business practices that they think, aren't exactly helping to mitigate climate change and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they've spoken out about it, but also so has Greenpeace.
Oh.
And but both parties, for very similar reasons, have hit out at the plan.
Okay.
And basically their arguments boil down to that if you hate climate change so much, Jeff, how can you continue to allow your cloud technologies to be used by the oil and gas sector, who are a major contributor to climate change, allegedly? So yeah, that's what their arguments boil down to. And it's, yeah, the Greenpeace and Amazon employee statements broadly make the same point that Greenpeace, I quite like the way they put it. They said JB is effectively talking out of both sides of his mouth. So on the one side, he's saying more needs to be done to combat climate change. But then on the other side, Amazon Web Services, their technologies are used by BP, for example, to, you know, mine oil or used to sort of basically refine their processes so they can, you know, dig out more fossil fuels, which in turn get burnt, and then globally the earth gets warmer. So that was quite an interesting kind of, their stance on it. You know, they're basically saying he can't position himself as a climate change force for good while his company is still supporting the work of organisations that, you know, are having a negative impact on the planet, basically. So, yeah, that's been quite interesting to
Amazon's
see.
Amazon's data centres are part of the problem too.
We've talked about that quite a lot on the podcast before. About the fact that that Amazon has come under more pressure to make sure that as its data centre footprint grows across the globe, that is being matched by renewable projects and stuff like that. So it's not just fueled exclusively by fossil fuels or, you know, predominantly by fossil fuels. That's one of the things that its own employees have hit out of them in the past, is that perhaps Amazon hasn't been as transparent as it should be about about its environmental track record.
Yeah.
So there was something quite interesting last year, I think it was, at the end of last year, that apparently there was a policy change made at Amazon that sort of banned its employees from speaking out again about company business without permission.
Yeah.
Like without marketing or PR help.
Or without any kind of sign off from anyone
like
see.
That.
Mm. Because I said you've got the climate, the Amazon Employees for Climate Justice group, but then they've also had people who've spoken out about the use of Amazon's image recognition technology going into the wrong hands.
Yeah.
So this policy change was sort of rolled out to make them kind of like, please stop talking, please. Please, you know, you're making us look bad. But they've carried on talking out regardless. which, you know, is fair enough. But they said actually in their statement this week, the Amazon Employees for Climate Justice people, that when they do speak out, it does seem to bring around positive change in how Amazon acts and behaves, so they're going to keep doing it, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah.
But what this is something I'm going to be writing next week, because in amongst the Greenpeace statement on all this, although it's mainly focused on what Amazon's doing, also said at the bottom that all of the big three cloud providers, Amazon, Google and Microsoft, need to cut ties with the oil and gas sector in the interest of saving the planet. Which I don't know. They're going to be huge contracts. They're huge, huge organisations. I can't see, personally speaking, I can't see any of them publicly declaring, right, we're cutting off like some of our biggest customers.
But if anyone could change the world, it's companies as big as that, right?
Yeah, and that is something that JB mentions in his Instagram post, that, you know, you have to... You know, if you want to save the planet, it's got to come from individuals, big companies, everybody working together.
True, very true. Not everyone has £1 million. How much is he given?
10 billion.
No, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's chump change as far as I'm concerned for me.
Yeah,
but I mean, other people,
like...
I mean, Jeff, yeah.
Not everyone has 10 billion quid to just, you know, like...
Well, apparently he has 130 billion quid, that's what it's worth. Sorry, $130 billion. Dollars.
Like, he is an individual.
Yeah, that's what he's valued at, according to Bloomberg.
Is that cash in the bank? I wonder.
Yeah.
Is it liquid?
Yeah, how quickly can he get his hands on it? Yeah, so, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think we'll see them necessarily severing ties, but I think what we might see is something we saw around reInvent, the big AWS conference last December, whereby they announced that BP, who is a big oil and gas company, are going all in on AWS for its European data centre. So they're going to close down the European data centres and move everything into AWS. But at the same time as that announcement was made, there was also a separate announcement made by BP that it had signed a sustainable energy agreement with AWS that would see it supply the cloud giant with enough renewable power to power 125,000 homes. So I think you'll see things like that. So on the one hand, like, oh yeah, we've signed this big contract, but we've also, you know, we're helping our supplier become more renewable, just this kind of like trade-off perhaps. I think we'll see more things like that perhaps, just to kind of maybe sweeten the PR a little bit or something, or try and sort of mitigate or reduce some of the criticism perhaps that they're getting for this kind of stuff. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Like I say, I've reached out to Microsoft and Google just to say, like, Greenpeace says you need to stop working with these companies, you're going to do it, and haven't got a response yet. So we'll see what they say.
And Google like to really trumpet what they're up to, don't they, in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, I think they said last year that they've been carbon neutral since 2007 across their whole business, not just data centers, just the whole of Google. So yeah, so they're pretty big there. Microsoft, I don't know, I can't quote exact details off the top of my head from them, but yeah, they've been making big strides on renewable sort of powered data centers, and also just making their operations generally more environmentally friendly too. And Amazon made some commitments along those lines as well at reInvent at the same time, around sort of them becoming more carbon neutral and making greater use of renewables within their data centres.
Well, thanks for that, Caroline.
You're welcome. Yes. I did pull off some stats, if you want, which I thought was quite funny. So JB's Instagram itself.
Yes.
He's had 122 posts.
Right.
He's got 1.5 million followers, but he follows no one.
Oh, wow.
He is a leader in every sense. he doesn't follow, he leads.
He is the king.
I never get that. Like, why are you on Instagram if you don't follow anyone? Like, what's the point? Is it just...
cat gifs.
Yeah, but you don't follow anyone. You see
it on the search. On the discoverable tab.
Yeah, but then...
only cat gifs.
But then would they be surfaced to you, if you know what I mean, if you don't follow anyone? So Instagram's got no data on what
it
you actually
sort
like
of
to look at.
It has a guess, but you can search for specific tags and topics, can't you? So it's, that tab can be
Like, so you can search it yourself and then it'll just pull up whatever you've searched for. Like, I wonder what his search history on Instagram looks like. If I get in the same room as the Maguire, that's going to be my first question.
Show me what's on your search tab.
You're both on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not. Maybe I should.
Why? Give all of your data to Facebook.
Yeah, I know. And I've been off Facebook forever, so...
But did you sign
that
up at some point?
Never. No.
So you've
never
been
I've
on...
I've never been on Facebook.
Well, don't start now. Have you got WhatsApp?
Yeah.
I've got WhatsApp.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's too late for you. You may as well, may as well buy into all of it. Get Facebook.
Yeah.
When Facebook first emerged, there was a... because I used to cover security then, and there was a security professional said, don't do it. Don't touch it.
And if that same security professional told you to jump off a cliff, would you do it? Be your own person.
No, I did what I was
like
told by those guys, because they know. And there's a sustainability angle to the story you're going to give us now, Claire.
So there is, and it will take me a while to get to it, so bear with.
I will
be patient, is what you're saying.
So this week I've been looking a little bit more into the experimental adventures of Marks and Spencer. And the story begins with a company called Signify. It's a firm known for connected lighting systems. And this week at EuroShop retail show in Germany, they announced a new product. And that's not something that we're normally in the habit of, you know, like reporting on or commenting on, you know, like
launching
new products.
No.
But
retail and Marks and Spencers has been part of the vetting of this particular product. So when Signify announced it, they said that Marks and Spencer had been involved. So it's an Internet of Things lighting system called Interact Retail, which allows users to control lighting across several stores from a single dashboard. So I've not had it actually confirmed at the time of this recording exactly how many stores Marks and Spencer's has tried to like use it in, or if it has plans to like roll it out to any more. But I do have a quote from the head of standards and innovation, property and store development at Marks and Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Alan Chisholm.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the system's allowed the retailer to be a lot more responsive in the stores that it's in comparison to conventional lighting controls in stores previously, and he also said that it would help them to reduce operational expenses and meet their sustainability targets, which was you know, like their sustainability.
So
I don't know what features Marks and Spencer's using in particular, but what I can tell you is that the product, it can be used to control lighting systems remotely based on a number of different factors. So they can look at, you know, like natural light in a building, and then you can determine like what lights you switch on and off based on whether it would just be better to have like light, natural light, or, you know, like whether there's like a concentrated number of people in that part of the store, because there's no point in, you know, like having a load of lights on if there's like no one over in the corner or whatever.
Fantastic.
Yes.
You know what I'm actually thinking?
Oh,
now,
no.
You know, like when you're in the office, I don't think we have it here, but sometimes in offices where, like, if no one moves for ages, it's
it
like,
turns all the lights on.
Yeah, imagine if you're in, like, a department store and that happens and there's, like, mannequins and stuff. You just, oh, God, I'm never going in Marks and Spencer's ever again. That's me out.
You would just be alone with the mannequins.
Yeah, just suddenly all the lights go down just because I've been standing there like staring at something. I can't decide if I want to buy this, and I've just stood till like too still for it was too long or something.
Do you know the worst ones are those is when you're in a toilet. You know
when
the toilet lights go off. You're like sitting on the toilet and you've been, you know, like spending a bit of time, or you've been scrolling through your phone, and then the light goes off and you're like, no, I don't know what the toilet paper is. You're trying to like move in a way that turns it back on without, you know, like any spillages or splashes. You just throw it and like yeet your phone across the room to like reactivate the light. So, you know, those are things that it can do. Like it, you can, so it's like a remote dashboard where you can control several stores' lighting as well. So the argument was that quite a lot of the time you need to have like site visits to determine, you know, like when is best to have lights on and off, and which lights is best to have and stuff like that. Whereas this can like reduce the number of site visits that you have to have, because you can also do like predictive maintenance. So if you can see that there's going to be a problem, you don't have to, you know, like go check a light, change a light, come up and do a follow up call. You can sort of like see if there's like any problems and stuff like that. So but we know that it's not the only experiment that Marks and Spencer's have been doing in sort of like the digital world, because they've had, you know, like a lot of things that they reported on in the last couple of years. So they did the mobile PayGo. Which was the mobile scan your shop, pay for it on your phone and then walk out, which they were trialling and then rolled out to 50 stores recently. They did the image searching for online, so customers can use like products that they might have seen elsewhere and image search it to see if there's like anything similar clothes-wise on like the Marks and Spencer website. There's the mobile charging stations, so you can charge your smartphone in stores.
When I get stuck with the mannequin, I need to send a 999 call.
You're like,
I need to charge my phone.
I need to use the torch on my phone.
Oh, I've got no battery.
Oh, no. And after admitting that like their online remit is a little bit behind some of their competitor retailers.
I'm actually crying. Oh, dear.
I love it so much.
Okay.
Have you had some kind of mannequin-based trauma in your past?
No, I think I'm just imagining that when it happens, I'm just not prepared.
Oh my God, wasn't there a Doctor Who episode where all of the mannequins
does
came
sound
to life?
Very Doctor Who.
There is one where loads of statues, if you turn your back on them, they get
blink.
I've never watched it, but it's quite a famous episode.
Yeah, it's called Don't Blink.
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of like the best, like the new episodes. I'm back.
New episodes.
Yeah. Newer, like since it
came
back.
David
Tennant.
Yeah, since it came back.
Echoes,
it was very, very, very good.
Yeah, it was very good.
So after they admitted that their online remake was a little bit, you know, like relaxed in comparison to some of their competitors.
Behind the times,
perhaps. Yeah, they signed a deal with Ocado to the tune of about 750 million quid.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of this year, I think is the timeline, that you should be able to order products off of Ocado from M&S and get them delivered.
Okay.
So that should sort that out. We'll have to see.
Yeah, it seems they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah,
I think so. Making some interesting moves.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's very experimental.
Yeah.
It can be the right approach, like the test and learn approach. They mentioned that recently.
Okay.
That, you know, like they've launched some new format stores. I can't remember what they called them. But yeah, they were saying that those new format stores are a test and learn approach. They're going to see what people respond to and whether or not they should, you know, like carry on with something. And yeah, I think quite often, you know, like that test bed approach works quite well rather than digital for the sake of digital, you know, where you like implement a massive system and then find out it's not fit for purpose. It's better to just see what works and then do more of it, which seems to be what they're doing.
Cool. Thanks for that, Claire.
That's all right.
Marks and Spencer. Pleased to hear about that. One of my favourite shops.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
For food? Or do you buy clothes
for
there?
For food and for some clothing.
What type of clothing? Socks?
Black jumpers.
Oh, okay.
Like the one you're wearing now.
That I'm wearing now, yeah. And for foods, actually.
Mm.
Which probably isn't the wisest policy.
Well, it's expensive,
it's not,
but
little,
it's good.
Is it?
It's good. That's why.
You just have to go there and hang out sometimes. You said it's like your favourite like place generally. So it's
just there,
hang out,
looking at Instagram, charging
in.
His phone, buying sandwiches online.
Just tap into the good vibes just in the store.
It's an old British store. Very popular in Europe.
Really?
Yeah, because it signifies Britishness, tradition. Very popular in France. Used to be a store in Brussels even. There isn't now though. I checked this morning. Which leads me neatly onto the European Union.
Oh.
That's together somehow.
Yeah.
So this week, the European Union did some radical things. It published three big documents to read. A white paper on artificial intelligence, a data strategy document, and an overall strategy document for digital. So one of the first big things that the new president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, is, you know, one of the first things under her presidency. Context is technologically, of course, loads of data, big data, and the rise of artificial intelligence technology. So what to do about that? Most of which is, of, as we've discussed, right, coming from America. And there's a lot of waffle in these documents. It's very, very high-level stuff. They're planning out for the next 5 years or so. There's some concrete things in there as well. But it's more like establishing the principles of the thing. And the overriding thing is to have a really good balance between companies and commercial interests on the one hand, but our rights as citizens of the European Union, which we no longer are, on the other. So the remaining citizens of the European Union after we've gone, everybody should benefit. Very inclusive and things like that. In terms of data, making data as open as possible for companies to exploit. So Tech UK jumped onto this with their statement, referencing the Open Data Institute. We had Hannah Fields from the ODI in here a couple of weeks ago. Tech UK welcomed the data strategy and said the ODI is a very good exemplar. All the kind of things should be happening in Europe. Big emphasis on trust and having AI be explainable. against, they're against algorithmic bias.
Well,
who isn't?
Yeah. People who deny that bias exists. That's who isn't.
Facial recognition, I didn't really realise this, but it's kind of prohibited by default.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's there.
What do you mean?
Actually, they've got a Q&A on this, where they say that allowing facial recognition is currently the exception. And with the AI white paper, the Commission wants to launch a broad debate on which circumstances might justify exceptions in the future, if any. So they want a debate about it.
Mm. Well, facial recognition is biased as well.
Yeah.
Because I can't remember the exact stats or where I read them, but it tends to work a lot more for white men than it does for example, black women.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big debate to be had, and they're saying there should be a big debate.
Well, yeah, there should be. Mm. With everyone involved. It shouldn't just be a debate between a load of middle-aged, middle-class white men. Yeah,
and someone who doesn't, like, everyone, you need viewpoints.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's with the European Union, I think. These tremendous documents, very, very long, and if you want to go read them, knock yourself out.
Mm. So, obviously you alluded to a bit there around Brexit, but does, when we're reading all this stuff now, is it just that, well, this doesn't apply to the UK, but Europe's doing all loads of great stuff, like, up yours, like UK. How are we supposed to, like,
navigate?
Yeah, we're reading some of this, and it sort of feels a bit like, oh, the grass is greener over there, they're doing loads of cool stuff. What are we doing over here?
I'm sure we're doing cool stuff too.
I'm sure we are, but it's like, oh man. We've left that party and they're having loads of fun.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing really interesting stuff in there.
Well, I'm sure all the people who voted for Brexit would argue that, like, now we don't have to share the booze at our party.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, who cares what's going on at that party?
Yeah, we've got our own party. Better. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't speak on behalf of everyone who voted for Brexit, but that's probably the mindset.
Yeah, obviously there's already elements of that stuff shaking out this week. What was it, the thing about Google that because of Brexit, our data is going to have to go via the US now.
Yeah, that's right.
I think we are starting to see, like, the shakeout of some of this stuff now. But just wonder.
It's coming out the woodwork now, isn't it?
Yeah, so I do wonder, just like I say, you read these stories, you're like, oh man, look what Europe's getting up to now without us. A bit like, you know, if you think on Facebook and you look up an X, you're like, oh, they're doing okay. That's fine.
Don't worry,
I didn't mind anyway. Yeah. I'm getting on fine.
Not that you asked, but...
Although, I did hear a guy on another podcast, other podcasts do exist, David Barber from UCL's Centre for Artificial Intelligence, and he said, I thought, quite an interesting thing about the way the EU does AI and has been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that they have not particularly looked to the EU historically for funding and stuff, because the EU tends to have this very nice, harmonious approach. So they'll have, like, a project, an AI project, and they'll get the Germans to do one thing, the Spanish to do another, the Brits to do something else. But at the end of the day, they never actually, like, produce the thing.
Oh, okay.
Because what they're doing is going through the motions of everyone being harmonious and collaborating, but it's all scattered, it's not concentrated to actually deliver, like, a digital assistant or whatever it might be.
Has been kind of a movement, particularly towards maybe Europe, so kind of championing its own homegrown sort of cloud providers rather than having everybody, having people reliant on, like, the big US giants. That's sort of a push that is a French infrastructure as a service provider called OVH Cloud. That's like their big selling point, is that, you know, oh, we're a European provider, we understand European customers, their needs, data protection needs.
I'm sure the European Union will lead on regulation and will bring that ethical dimension to bear, and the UK will probably back that up to the hilt, because we put a lot of emphasis on that as well. As we'll do the ethics bit of AI, that'll be the thing that we really excel in. Hence these kind of institutes that we've set up, like the Alan Turing Institute, and I suppose the ODI, and there's a whole bunch of others, Ada Lovelace. institute, etc., etc. So yeah, it's very high level, and I think in very long term. So yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah.
The European Union. Yeah, they're thinking very long term. But sadly, our time in this episode is drawing to a close. Right, so next week, guys, what are we up to?
So I'm going to a Westminster Business Forum policy conference on the UK retail sector and the future of the high street. I don't know if it's going to have any tech stuff included, but I'm going to go and find out.
Is this one of these Westminster things?
Yeah,
so, yeah,
the
they can be really
forums.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're
actually.
Really good.
They can be very, very good.
Very good. So yeah, I'm heading to that. Hopefully I'll definitely learn some stuff. Hopefully I can write about it too.
I hesitate to ask you, Caroline, because I think the answer is going to be...
I'm just chained to my desk next week. I'm not going anywhere. I have to talk to a lot of people over the phone. But yeah, I've just got a huge to-do list of more IR35 and load charge stuff. There's a couple of... I don't really want to talk about them at the moment because I'm still trying to get my head around writing them. So yeah, there's a couple of quite interesting sort of stories coming out next week that just... Yeah, just going a bit deeper into all of that. So that's going to be occupying my brain for the next few days until I work out how I'm going to write those. So yeah, but lots just basically in the office next week and just staring in despair at my to-do list.
Yeah,
I've got a couple of juicy case studies to finally get off the back burner, one train line and the other Volvo. So I'm working on it. Anyone who's listening, I'll get there.
Have you got one on to do with airways? So I can do planes, trains and automobiles?
Nope.
Oh. There we go. Thank you. You should, though. You should go round it out. Do British Airways or, I don't know, some other plane company.
Yeah. Well, travel's a very touchy subject at the moment, isn't it? Our management editor of technology, Cliff Sarens, a leader in this week's issue, urging us not to travel so much, and the coronavirus has brought this to the fore.
He doesn't like to travel anyway.
He doesn't like to travel anyway.
He's biased. This is a biased opinion.
Also, I think when we're not in the office, he misses us. So.
Yeah, he just wants us to collect around him like his tribe.
Yeah.
And you're going to be off to Vegas at some point.
Always. Yeah. I'm always destined for Vegas.
It's cool, sir.
So that's all we've got time for this week. It just remains for me to say thank you very much to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you to you, listener, for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.